Hello, heroes, and welcome to Session Zero, a podcast exploring role-playing through a psychological perspective. I'm Porter Green.
And I'm Steve Discont.
And today we will be discussing rituals at the table.
Porter, do you have any rituals at the table?
No.
I don't believe you.
I mean, I don't think that having a custom dice bag for every character with a dice palette custom created for them from the dice that I own and also purchase for each new character counts as a ritual.
You don't think that's a ritual?
Oh.
Why not?
Because, okay, fine. So maybe it's a little bit of a ritual.
No, that's not a bad thing, though.
Well, no. I mean, I've definitely seen all kinds of rituals, especially around the clicky-clackies,
the
right?
The clicky-clackies, the dice?
Yes. The math click-clacks.
Yeah.
All throughout my entire career as gaming.
Mm-hmm. And you know, it's not really a bad thing to have a ritual.
I don't think so. I think it's a really human thing to have a ritual. Ritual is a huge part of human function and emotional regulation.
Yeah. So, I mean, what is a ritual but a series of behaviors that you do at a specific place in time that has some type of meaning to it? Be it cultural or personal.
Absolutely. I mean, yeah, ritual is everything from the way that you stand and prepare before you give a speech to something complex and religious to something that your sports fan does when they go to the big game.
Or even, you know, even simpler to that, we can say that rituals sometimes are tied to superstitions.
Mm-hmm.
Let's look at the classic, you know, Western one, stepping on a crack, breaking your mother's back.
Throwing salt over your shoulder to ward off bad luck.
Mm-hmm. These are, in a sense, rituals that we have in society that serve some type of personal cultural meaning.
Mm-hmm.
Don't know the origins of the step on the crack one. That's...
I don't either. It's just one of those sort of cultural American nursery rhyme things that just is out there.
Yeah. Now, you know, we use rituals in the same way, kind of the sense that we use superstitions. We use them in various ways. And they're usually comprised of, like, there's some very defining aspects in psychology that define a ritual.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, one of the first ones is that it's defined by a very specific set of physical features that are pertaining to characteristic aspects of an individual's actions that compose them. So, and these tend to be structured, rigid, formal, and repetitive. So when we say this, they are actions that you take that you have to follow consistently every time in the same format.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, there are basketball players that might have to have the exact same shoes that they wear at practice. They have to tie their shoes the exact same way, and they have to take free throw shots from the exact same place on the court every time before they can go into a game, before they're going to feel comfortable.
Mm-hmm. Another really good example might be having a very specific warm-up that you do before you go on stage or before you start a scene.
We were just talking about this. Voice actors absolutely have that. Partly it warms their voices up, but if they don't do that, they might not feel comfortable doing it. Maurice LaMarche, for example, some of you might know the voice of Brain from Pinky and the Brain, does a very classic outtake from Orson Welles, from a commercial that Orson Welles did that happened between him and an audio producer. And Maurice LaMarche does this every time before he records.
Another great example of that is Stephen Colbert's pre-show ritual, which is too long to detail here in completeness, but it does involve different catchphrases with different people on his staff, certain handshaking gestures, slapping himself in the face twice, and all sorts of different places where he pauses and stops and speaks.
And this happens before every record, correct?
Before every record.
So that this just covers, like, this actually covers the first and second parts of what make up a ritual. So one, we have these behaviors that are structured, rigid, formal, and repetitive, but also there's this aspect that there's an invariability in the performance. It cannot vary, and that if there's any variation, it's going to have some type of psychological impact. It's going to impact some certain elements in the way one thinks about this ritual and the way they look at it.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, you might have a situation where if Stephen Colbert doesn't slap himself twice in the face before the record, he's going to feel that everything that he's done in preparation before the record is all for naught,
mm-hmm.
that it could be a failure.
Absolutely. And that shows up a lot in personal ritual, too. Like when somebody has something that they're going to do before the big game or the big speech, or when somebody's getting ready for a role-playing game, for example. A really common one I see is if somebody touches somebody else's dice. I've seen that cause a full player meltdown before because players have really strict ways they set their dice out, ways mm-hmm. they categorize their dice. Some people pre-roll their dice. Some people lay them out from, like, you know, highest number of sides to lowest or some other version of that. And I've actually played with players where if you walk over and you just, like, mess up their dice, it can throw them off for long periods of time.
Unless they're given the opportunity, I imagine, to reset it back to where it needed to be, right? Mm-hmm. Well, and that kind of gets into, you know, we have that first part. We're scaffolding this a little bit. We have mm-hmm. that first part. We have these very complex repetitive behaviors. We see this invariability that it can't be changed, that if you're missing one step, this could mean that the whole process is for failure. And then there's the fact that rituals contain elements that lack a direct instrumental purpose, but they have only a psychological purpose. So it's not that you're setting up the dice because you know, well, this is going to make sure this guarantees I'm going to roll 20s mm-hmm. or that the story is going to go well. But this is something that has personal meaning to you with the hopes. You might not even recognize that this is going to lead to positive outcomes.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, there's going to be different reasons why people use rituals, either in role-playing or even outside of it. You know, I want to briefly acknowledge obsessive-compulsive disorder.
For sure.
Because obsessive-compulsive disorder, as a form of mental illness, is highly characterized by rituals.
It can be. The TV version of obsessive-compulsive disorder, or OCD, is usually all about the behaviors often judged as silly or weird that people do in response to their obsessive thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
But obsessive compulsive disorders, compulsions, can be physical behavior or they can be mental behavior. They can be avoiding behavior. Mm-hmm. And sometimes they're not even present at all. In the subtype of OCD called pure O OCD, there are actually no compulsions present.
When you say pure O, I assume that means pure obsessive?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And it all happens in the theater of the mind.
Okay.
So it's important to note that. But yeah, rituals can become rigid, right? They can become overly structured and they can show up in anxiety as well, where people feel that if they don't complete their ritual or if the ritual goes wrong, then they can't do the thing.
Sure. And I think it's important. Part of the reason I brought up OCD is because there are certain aspects, especially in the case of how you were talking about, like the OCD that's characterized with compulsive aspects. Rituals exist there to help with certain aspects. One is a big one is regulate emotions. And mm-hmm. you just talked about this. You know, rituals are done, whether we recognize that we're doing this or not for them, to try and either assuage our anxieties, to reduce our thoughts of stress or negative outcomes, possibly to make ourselves feel better, to bring elation or happiness to ourselves in preparation for a game to, you know, one might say, put yourself in the right mindset.
Mm-hmm. They're also about empowerment and comfort, right? Feeling like you have control in that moment and feeling like you're doing everything you possibly could to make sure you have the outcome you want.
And another reason why we have rituals is because we prefer them to regulate what are known as performance goal states.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's going to sound a little weird. So a really simplified version of what that's saying is we use rituals because we hope they're going to maybe ideally predetermine how an outcome will be what we're desiring. So for example, some people might have a particular ritual that they do before taking an exam one day as a student. So it might be before they take an exam, they will take a bath. They'll use the same bath bomb from Lush every time.
Mm-hmm.
They will go into the exam. They will wear the exact same sweatpants that they always do. And they might wear their favorite hat.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a reason for that. It's because they know, they might say, well, these are the lucky things I do every time before I take an exam. But what that ritual is kind of saying is, I'm doing this because I think it will lead to a better outcome.
Mm-hmm.
You're trying to regulate your outcomes. You're regulating these performance goals.
Yeah, the lucky object is a really good example of that shows up a ton, which you talked about a little bit, like always wearing my lucky hat or my favorite sweatpants, or like having a touchstone good luck charm. And where it becomes problematic, again, is when you say, I don't have this thing. My lucky sweatpants are in the wash. I can't find my hat. So now mm-hmm. I can't take my exam because I will fail.
I can't find my favorite piece of amethyst. I can't go and sit for my biology exam.
Absolutely.
Or I can't go into this meeting before the board of directors because I haven't talked to my mom for exactly 5 minutes before mm-hmm. every meeting.
Exactly. So yeah, so it's definitely got a double-edged sword. There's a little bit of a balancing act with ritual because like with anything that we do to manage our emotions and to help us feel calmer and connected, we have to look out for being rigid.
And, you know, there's another aspect that is common in rituals I think is really interesting in the psych literature, and that is the idea that rituals help regulate our social connections to others.
For sure. Sharing a ritual experience together brings us closer. It makes bonds. I mean, a lot of, like, I know a lot of people, especially in our age group, Steve, like in their 30s or younger, that are involved in organized religion, for example. And they talk about it's not so much the connection with the divine that brings them there. It's the community. It's the shared expectations and the shared ritual and that emotional connection to others that brings them in.
Well, you know, I could speak from my own personal experience, too. You know, as someone who is not particularly practicing Judaism on a religious and spiritual level, but is definitely ethnically Jewish, and that is part of my heritage and who I am, you know, since coming to Chicago, I have a lot of friends who I LARP with and I game with who are Jewish practicing and not. And participating in particular holidays or in particular events with them, for me, it is, even if I'm not fully and cognitively engaged with the religious aspects of it, there is that community aspect. You know, these group rituals, what they do is they enhance our affiliation with our fellow group members, as well as, in a sense, they advertise group loyalty, whether we recognize it or not. So when we, for example, if I am going to a Passover Seder and I'm going through the motions of reading a Haggadah and singing the same, you know, the same songs and doing everything with the Seder plate, this is part of the ritual that we do together because it symbolizes that importance of the community.
And it can connect through intergenerational things, and it can connect through all different sorts of like broader cultural context too. Like in your example, you might be connecting with your family of origin and with your queer family at the same time. If you're at, like, for example, a modern queer Seder in Chicago. So like you're remembering your grandmother and your grandfather at some level. Or if you go to, say, Gen Con every year, and there's rituals of going to a convention, and in that moment you're remembering sort of the history of gaming, and like you're doing the same steps that you do every time you go. There's an element of ritual to things that we do in tradition, and all these things tie together.
Yeah, and now you've got me sitting here trying to think if I have any rituals that actually involve going to conventions.
Oh, I definitely do.
Like what?
Well, it's interesting because they change over time too, but I can remember 10 years ago when I first started going to conventions, it was myself, my now wife, and our other partner. And I can remember just like the feeling of leaving the car and walking through the doors into the space and going from being just a bunch of people who were sitting in a car that were big dorks to being our personas that we are within the fandoms that we're part of. And just that moment of shift, especially because like within that household, there was some social anxiety and some things going on that when we walked through those doors, that went away.
That's interesting, because then that kind of also ties into that ritual aspect where it is part of regulating your emotions too. And there's a part of it that ties into like that personal or psychological meaning that comes from it. Like I know when I get to a convention, like there is the unpacking moment, and then there is the like there is the time in my hotel room where I just sit there for an hour. And it's the, even if I'm not doing a lot of particular actions, it is me decompressing or taking time to maybe let myself get into the non-travel, non-professional mode and get into the headspace of the event that I'm going to. Even, you know, even if I'm at a, like a professional conference, like if it's one that, like if I'm at PSYOP, my attitude at PSYOP is going to be a lot different than if I'm, if I would be, say, at a work function.
Yeah, like one of the first things I do when I go to a convention, whether it's professional or fandom, is unpack. Like maybe I won't take my stuff out of my suitcase, but like I make the room my own and I put things away where I want them to be. And like if I have cosplays, I set them out or I unpack them from wherever they're going to be so that they're all ready to go and not wrinkled. And that act of ownership is very ritualistic for me. And I get, I'm very upset if like, for example, we go to a con and friends show up at the room before I've had a chance to do that. It makes me really uncomfortable.
Why does that make you uncomfortable?
Because I don't feel like it's my space yet until I've done that.
And it has to be your space before you can really be part of the convention.
Yeah, I mean, you can't really entertain in a space that's you're just a guest at, right? You have to, it has to be yours.
Okay. So kind of brings me back, you know, we've talked about, you know, so again, rituals, we have these, you know, structured, rigid, formal, and repetitive behaviors that we do that, you know, you can't violate the practice that you have because it could be, could seen as majorly impacting the outcomes that you might be perceiving. You know, they have some type of interpretive meaning or symbolic expression that these rituals mean, whether it might be making a space your own, getting yourself in the right mindset, preparing for the task at hand. And we do it to regulate our emotions. We do it to regulate our performance goal states and our social connections to others.
For sure.
So in that case, when could someone adopt a ritual for role play in a way that might be healthy or might be beneficial?
I think rituals are great for dividing spaces and dividing mood states, right? So if you're coming from a busy day of work and you're going to do a LARP that's like on a Friday night, and you're trying to get out of that work headspace and into LARP, wouldn't it be cool if there was like a ritual before the LARP started where everybody came together and, you know, like rang a bell or said something, or there was a moment of silence, or there was a song, or there was some sort of thing that brought everybody into a state of readiness into the same space, mm-hmm. and then dispersed them again into the game. Like at tabletop, I think a lot of that shows up in things like everybody sits in a particular chair and they arrange their things in a particular way. Because tabletoppers have got this very specific way they want their area to look. Almost every tabletopper I know has some version of, you know, my pen, my pencil, my eraser, my dice, my notes. Or now that we all use D&D Beyond, you know, my computer.
Mm-hmm.
And you get it all set up and arrayed in front of you. And then you have your spot. And if somebody sits in your chair, it's gross and it feels terrible.
Heck, I think that's the same for work. Mm-hmm. I think that's the same, especially, you know, if you're working in an open office environment, which, you know, opinions aside about open office environments versus cubicles versus office, that's a whole other issue. Not getting into that here. If there's a spot that you always sit in every time and then you get to work and someone's in your spot, or if you're in a classroom, if some of you heroes are currently in high school or middle school or in college and you have that room you always sit in that chair that's not ever officially assigned, but it's been yours because you've been sitting in it from the first day.
Oh my God.
And someone else sits in your seat.
A total power move to sit in somebody else's chair during an exam if you don't like them.
Oh, that's a power move indeed.
Right? It's terrible, though, when somebody sits in your chair.
Yeah. And that's partly because you have there's a symbolic representation there.
Mm-hmm.
Psychologically, you've associated that seat with yours. And I think that can absolutely can sit there in the role-playing game experience, too.
For sure.
I really liked that idea, though, you said about giving either a moment of meditation or a song or ringing a bell to bring people in to the moment for gaming,
mm-hmm.
so they can have that moment to maybe flip the switch in their head, to very simply put it, to put themselves in the game mindset.
Absolutely. Because one of the ways that games really suffer, I think, is from too much distraction. Again, this is more from a tabletop context than it is from the LARPing, because in LARPing, you're more embodied, but it can be hard to put down the world outside and like to get out of the worries that you have and really be present.
Mm-hmm.
Especially if you have a big room, like a lot of people at the table, or you're gaming in somewhere where there's a lot of background noise. So taking time to do a ritual that brings all the players' attention into the moment of the game can really help to like put all the telephones down, or like to stop telling stories about, you know, that thing that happened last Thursday and focus back on, you know, what's happening, you know, this Monday.
Sure.
In the game.
Now, I think it's important to remember, though, that a ritual itself might not serve the direct purpose that we're thinking about it, because it has to be symbolic in some sense.
Mm-hmm.
So there's, for example, you know, the literature said that someone who is praying, who goes to a religious service and prays, that might not be what we consider ritual, because it is an active participation in a religious practice. Where a person is actively thinking and hoping to idealize certain things forward based on their experiences and their thoughts. But a ritual instead, you know, we have these particular behaviors that we're doing that has more of the symbolic meaning than an ideal outcome. You know, one thing I think is important to keep in mind is that there are certain things that we could be doing before a game that we might think might be a ritual, but at least according to psychology, it wouldn't really be one.
Mm-hmm.
So what I'd like to think of an example is if at the beginning of every game, you sit down and you go around and ask players if they remember what happened the previous game. So mm-hmm. if you're doing a recap, might not be a ritual because it has an objective purpose. The objective purpose is to get them to remember exactly what happened the last session so that you can move seamlessly into this next session where everyone has the same information in mind, is on the exact same page, so to speak. Where a ritual instead might be, as you were saying, we always play the same song from Enya at the beginning of game because it's calming and we're going to get everyone in the headspace for game.
Mm-hmm.
That's a little bit different because it's going to have a symbolic meaning of this represents calm. This represents a transition of moving ourselves in the headspace from the outside world into the game world, as opposed to, or if you're doing a recap, the song, the playing of Enya is the ritual. The recap has the objective purpose of and a goal of getting everyone to remember exactly what happened.
Mm-hmm. And things like that, like a recap, can take on a ritualistic quality, because tradition and ritual are, you know, basically the same thing, right? Like traditions are kind of like ritual over time in a lot of ways. And if you've always done something a certain way, it can take on a quality of being necessary for the game to run well. And then if you don't do it one time, it can be really disturbing.
Mm-hmm. I was thinking just now, you know, our network has a lot of improvisers and mm-hmm. a lot of friends of the network who are also improvisers. Mm-hmm. And an example that I was thinking of is there's this tradition in improv that I've been told about where, and it might be a ritual, where improvisers before going on a show will go up to another person and go, "I've got your back." And each person goes around and says that to each other. And I think from my understanding, that's supposed to, it is a ritual to put yourself ready to go out there, but that also represents, in that sense, that it's regulating your social connections. Mm-hmm. It is advertising you're loyal to the rest of the group. You're enhancing your affiliation by voicing that you will have and support them in their performance. But also if someone's new to that group or new to that improv group, it helps demonstrate to them the social norms that are there with you.
Mm-hmm. Another really good example of this, now bear with me here, memes.
Go on.
So when you have inside jokes within your group or you have call and responses that you do that take on a meme-ish quality, that can be a ritual.
Yeah, how so?
Well, because if I always say, "Hey, Steve, how's it hanging?" And you always say, "Slightly to the left." Oh, and we do that every time we see each other. If one of us, if one of us doesn't say that, then we've broken the ritual. And how are we going to relate to each other?
True.
It's like it's almost like a throw and a catch. And it can happen with in-game catchphrases. It can happen with like little bits of world trivia, mm-hmm. with little bits of interaction that we all have.
Yeah, I could see that. It's an interesting take on memes, though. Mm-hmm. For note, we don't actually greet each other like that, do we?
No, we super don't. That's actually that. Like straight up from like various terrible television cartoons that I watch type of interaction. That's not really us.
So kind of bringing it, I guess, to its conclusion, what do we think are some positive takeaways with rituals that our players can think about that our heroes can maybe push forward into their own games?
I think ritual gets sold short a lot because of its ties to religion and people are afraid of it, either because they have bad experiences with organized religion themselves or because they're afraid of treading on somebody else's. But ritual is an essential part of human function, and it can be really cool and it can be really rich to give your characters rituals, to give them superstitions, to give them good luck charms, to give them ways of sort of praying or connecting to things that are different. And also rituals can form a connection for your group and help you bond together, help you structure your space, help you be present or not present for your game.
I really like that point you've made about adding it to the character too, because mm-hmm. it really does add a richness to the world, either your character's world or the world of the game you're playing in. Things don't have to have a mechanical benefit to make it an interesting story.
Absolutely. I think that mechanical benefit is an important backbone, but it's definitely something that we shouldn't be overly tied to.
Yeah. I mean, the rituals that your characters create or that you have for the game could inform the story depending on what your master ceremonies or your LARP runners decide might make interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, rituals can be story hooks, even.
Oh, yeah. Especially the lucky object is lost. Mm-hmm. You better find it or that character's going to be distraught forever.
Yeah, or what about like a D&D character, like a warlock, where like they have this unknowable connection to something greater than them, and the rituals they create to talk to it could shape how that being comes to even be part of the story.
Would that case still count as what we consider to be rituals in the sense of psychology, though? Because if those rituals are essential to building and maintaining that relationship and that connection to that being, then I feel like it develops that objective, that particular goal objective.
True. But I was thinking more along the lines of, like, if I cut my hand, then my magic works better.
Mm,
you know?
Okay.
Or if I say if I sing this song, then my magic works better.
Mm. Or everything has to be, classic example, everything has to be done in threes. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, I think I get with that.
Yeah, it's such a big thing. Ritual is psychologically and how it manifests in human interaction, because we do like that feeling of control and that feeling of being empowered in our world. And if I do these things in just the right way, then I'll have the best outcome. I think it shows up in all kinds of tricky places.
And I think you as players, heroes, can find places either interesting or fascinating that you can put those rituals into. Even if it's something that you as a table come to develop together, or you as a LARP come to develop together as a way to get yourself in or out of the space. You know, quick callback to one of our previous episodes on Bleed. There's that idea of there's a garment that you put on and that you take off at the beginning of the game and that you take off at the end of the game to symbolize entering the headspace and removing, leaving the headspace of a particular character or a particular game. So that was a ritual that exists for Bleed, but it could be there as a way to help everyone get into the mindset or to accept, like, this is, we do this because this is what happens as we get ready for game. And it becomes a cultural norm or becomes a group ritual for gaming. I think on that note, heroes, I think we've definitely hit our time for a session. So in that case,
we'll see you next session. If you've been enjoying Session Zero and other podcasts on our network, and you value independent creators being able to support themselves and continue to create content for you, consider supporting our network on Patreon at patreon.com/oneshotpodcast.
Your contributions to the One Shot Network helps us to pay for the studio that we record in, the content that we use to represent our work, the hosting of the podcast on the magic internet, and all the spicy water we consume. Becoming a contributor to the One Shot Network Patreon grants you access to bonus content in the network's secret archive, such as some of our personal gaming stories and possibly some of your favorite network characters on our pretend therapy couch.
There are also other perks like the Gift and Book Club, the T-shirt club, and many more. Please consider contributing today.
If you're looking for another show to listen to, why not try One Shot? Every week on One Shot, James D'Amato brings you actual play recordings with a talented cast of improvisers, game designers, and other notable nerds. Each month features a new group trying a new system, exploring a wide variety of genres. The stories are self-contained, so you can jump in anywhere. And it's a great way to discover new games. Discover the magic of RPGs with One Shot on your favorite podcast app.
Heroes, we would love to hear from you and hear your ideas for our show. You can find us on Twitter at Session Zero Pod, or you can email us at sessionzero@oneshotpodcast.com.
The song you hear right now is Hikari by I Love Brandon off his album Earth and Sky. If you would like to hear more of his work, visit eyelovebrandon.com or find him on Spotify, SoundCloud, Twitter, or wherever else you like to find your chill beats that listen to podcasts too.
Remember, heroes, Session Zero is for sharing information, not for therapy. If you feel like you need support, check out Psychology Today's Find a Therapist database. If you're experiencing a crisis, head into the emergency room or text CONNECT to 741-741 from anywhere in the USA. Be safe out there, and we'll see you in the next session.